Good morning, everybody. Welcome to today's version of The Hours. I'm Tyler. This is Savvy Coaching. And I want to take this opportunity to remind everyone why we, here at Savvy, choose to do this every single week. So it's there recorded for you. So it's there live for you if you happen to be able to get on live. We believe in the power of coaching and mentorship. In fact, all of the greatest lessons that I can remember learning in my life, I was guided along the way in each aspect of my life, whether it be coaching. I was guided through the lessons I learned in coaching. As I learned things, as I observed things, as I was given feedback on things, it always came from someone else. And the same would be true for business. The same would be true for my personal life, and the same would be true for my spiritual life. Most of us are not as intentional as we should be surrounding ourselves with greater-minded people that can challenge us, hold us accountable, introduce new ideas, and oftentimes just tell us the truth and tell us when we're out of line and being stupid, exposing our blind spots. Unfortunately, the reason why most coaches don't grow or learn or improve as quickly as they could is because most coaches shy away from people that disagree with them. And I would say this is specifically when building their coaching staff. Most people want us to be like them or just to like them. And when we choose to surround ourselves with people or coaches that are like us or want us to like them, inevitably, the things they will tell us are the things that we want to hear. And one of my favorite verses in the Bible is, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend." And I believe, and I've always believed that to mean that a true friend will tell you things that might hurt, that might wound you, but it's faithful because they do it consistently and they do it from a place of love and deep care, not from a place of trying to see you fail, but from a place of trying to see you succeed. And all of that I'm sharing because I was reminded yesterday, having a long conversation with one of my best friends I've had for my entire life, who has since moved further away. And inevitably that means we don't talk as much. I think it'd been a couple of weeks since we had spoken. But my good friend Jordan has always really epitomized that verse, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend." And so I don't think that Jordan and I have ever had a conversation where we didn't encourage each other, lift each other up, or question each other. Even just specifically in the conversation yesterday, you know, someone can say, "How's your family doing?" And you'll say, "Oh, you know, kids are growing up, kids are doing good. This is what we're enjoying. Kids are in sports. Here's a funny story," right? And that's how most conversations would go. Or someone like my friend Jordan yesterday can say, "How's your marriage?" And because of the faithfulness of the friendship, I know that he wants to see my marriage flourish and thrive and wants to talk through any obstacles that I might be encountering in that. The reason I share all of that, I would say, is twofold. One, I would encourage you as a leader, as a coach, as a person, to seek out friends that will give you faithful wounds, that will tell you the truth. I would encourage you to do that in your personal life. If you don't have anyone in your circle that is consistently challenging you, you probably need to find a new circle if you're the one that's challenging others. And more specifically to basketball, when you're building your coaching staff, when you are receiving feedback, when you are choosing who you're going to put yourself around in as a coach, I would just encourage you, Find someone that will challenge you, expose your blind spots, and ask you questions that will stretch you, because that is how we grow. And that is secondarily the point I'm attempting to make here, this long-winded start. That's my hope with Savvy Coaching. I have had coaches and leaders that have challenged my coaching every step of the way. I would actually go as far as to say I have been blessed to be around so many great coaches throughout my experience in basketball, because my experience was unique. And I'll share this for a moment. Sorry, I'm not trying to make this about myself. I'm really trying to make this about you, which is my heart for Savvy Coaching. I got around coaches I had no business being around. Because I got out of college coaching at a young age, where I was an inexperienced young coach of 25 years old, 24, 25 is when I actually got out of college coaching. And I thought my path was to go be a Division I head coach, to take a team to the NCAA tournament. That was the vision that I had for myself. And very quickly, I realized that that wasn't what I actually wanted. And I was so blessed to stumble into a mentor and a corporation, a company, Point Guard College, that groomed me. And because I was no longer coaching with one coaching staff for an entire year, where I would be able to be mentored by one coach, and because I got associated with a credible organization, all of a sudden at the age of 24, I was going from working with national team coaches to the best international trainers to visiting the best Division I coaches to getting to go and attend and listen and spend time with the best presenters and teachers of the game at clinics, 6 to 8 a year. I got to get the reps of coaching a new team of athletes every single week. And it was the unbelievable blessing of me getting around greater minded people and not just being in my own little bubble is what I believe helped me develop and grow to a coach that now other people want to actually listen to and be coached by. And so our intention here at Savvy, and even my intention in going and seeking out an incredible coach and leader like Mark Cassio, who has now joined our Savvy Coaching team, has partnered with me to coach coaches, is I don't want to get stagnant. I can learn from Mark. I do learn from Mark. And I wanted to find someone that I could speak with every day that would make me better and push me. And in bringing Mark on, myself and other people that I continue to try to seek out to introduce to our Savvy Coaching community, is I want other coaches. I want all coaches. I want greater impact for Savvy Coaching because I know what it has done in the careers and even the lives of so many Savvy coaches to date, is I want to continue to seek out people that can serve you. And why are we doing this every week, or why am I doing this every week for the coaches that choose to listen, is because it was done for me. Is there were hours invested in me, in my coaching journey, by people that were a little further along or even just had something to offer. And so that's our commitment. And, you know, we'll get Mark to continue to come on and do episodes of the hours. We'll get Claire, who has a ton to offer coaches, will come on and do episodes of the hours. We'll continue to find other coaches that we believe have something to offer, do episodes of the hours, so that you can spend hours with coaches that can make you better and challenge your thinking and give you new ideas to chew on. So I am thankful for those of you that are going to be listening to this one. I know the vast majority of you do listen to it recorded. I got a wonderful note from one of our Savvy coaches that said they were listening to last week's hours while just doing the dishes, and gave them a thought that they went and applied the very next game with their team. Had a more edifying experience and had more success and beat a team they'd never beat because they didn't get tight because of something that it was shared in the hours. If there's one coach that will listen to this while doing the dishes or mowing the lawn or shoveling snow, because I think a lot of people are getting hit with a cold wave. I'm going to keep getting up and doing it. I'm going to keep doing my research to get better, to continue to share with you. So that's why we do the hours. Thank you for investing in Savvy Coaching so that we can do the hours for you. I am thrilled to be able to bring Mark on, and we'll be announcing in a short little live webinar on Saturday. We will be announcing for founding members to celebrate this new partnership between Mark and myself. We'll be announcing a special founding member offer. I guess the handful of you that will be listening to this hours will get the sneak peek. A founding member offer as a thank you to anyone that's ever invested in Courtside with Mark or Savvy with me, as we really are going to expand our reach and invest heavily in adding a lot more coaches to our coaching membership. We want to say thank you to the coaches that have invested in us and gotten us here. And we want you to help build this community going forward and continue to be a light in the coaching community. And so we put together a little something to celebrate. We're calling it our founding member offer, and want to offer it up to anyone that's ever invested in Savvy or Courtside. And we'll be announcing that Saturday. So stay tuned. I won't say anything more about that, but I will dive into what I want to share with everybody today. Keep reading. There's a comedian. I'm not gonna say his name right. His name's Nate Pregazzi. I should actually pull up the clip. And actually, let me see if I can, because I'll probably butcher it. But he's really funny. And that's not him. All right, we'll try to pull it up. Maybe I'll try to pull it up for you guys next time. But he plays off his like Southern charm and being just kind of a simple Southern guy. And he has this one bit that he does about reading, and he's like I don't read, he's like, but I do believe that books are the path to smart. And then he just like goes on and talks about, he's like, but there's so many words, and just like play, he's like, could you give me a break, can you put a blank page in here, he's like, and there's just more words, right? So like it can be daunting. I know like there's not a there's many people that are readers and many people that are not readers. There's a line from a book, I believe the book was Burn Your Goals by Joshua Metcalf. I believe that's where I read this line. But it basically said that there's a direct correlation between the number of books that he read and his influence in the world. And when he first got into, wanted to become an author and a speaker and a teacher, no one wanted to listen to him. He was living in a closet in a gym in California. And he had all this he wanted to share with the world, but nobody was listening to him. And so he just started to read books, consume books. And he found that there's a direct correlation between how many books he read and the level of influence he had. And as he read, his influence grew. And I really took that to heart. I think that was 12 years ago or more. And so I chose at that point to read a book a week. And fortunately, I'd taken a speed reading class back in college, so I chose to read a book a week. And I found the exact same thing. The more books I read, the more influence I had, because I had more to offer. And like your level of influence will be directly related to how much you have to offer. So when I train players, when they right away see that I can help make them better, then I have more influence in their world and their lives. One of the high school seniors in high school I'm working with right now, you know, as I've helped him and he's had his best season yet as he's pursuing playing college basketball, he have more influence. So if I say, hey, you have a quarterly goal that every quarter you go in knowing how many threes you're attempting to get off in this quarter and how many times you go to the free throw line this quarter. He goes and does it and he texts me back and he says, here's my goal, here's where I hit it, and here's where I missed, right? So like, I would never have that influence. He might be like, maybe I'll do it, maybe I won't, if I can't actually, you know, if I don't have something to give him to help him. But the same is true for you and your team. If for some reason you don't have the level of influence over your team, or I hear this often from coaches, especially after I go in and do a program, clinic, or work with a team, and they're like, I can tell them that for years, right? And maybe this will be a faithful wound, okay? Because it may or may not be true for you. It's been true for most coaches that I've worked with and seen. if you've been telling them something for years and they haven't done it, then it's on you. Then it's on you. Like you haven't found a way to get through to them yet. You either need greater influence, a better teaching method, a better way to measure it, more clarity in your communication. Like, it's on you. Whenever a parent, because I work with all of you probably trained players before as well, when a parent's like, oh, I tell them the same thing, but they don't listen to me, right? What I tend to do with parents, and probably what you tend to do with parents as well, is like, yeah, it's tough. It's tough being a parent. You know, I know you're saying the same thing. But in reality, there may be a small portion of that, but in reality, I, as the trainer, am perceived by the player as more of an expert than the parent. And in reality, I am more of an expert than the parent. I can't think of a scenario where a parent that has told me that is more of an expert than me in basketball. And by expert, I mean a combination of the level at which they play, the level at which they coach, and their level of training, teaching, knowledge, experience, and time and hours invested. And so what to an amateur might seem like, oh, I say the same things as you, to an expert would appear, you don't say the same things in the same way with the same level of credibility. And that credibility comes from all of the time invested, which brings us back full circle to the hours. This is why we do the hours, is we at Savvy are investing time in you. And as you listen to this, you're investing hours in yourself to grow in your credibility and level of influence in the world. And one of the ways that I'm investing time to help you, because I'm setting the tone for this year, I'm not planning to read 52 books this year, but I am planning on reading at least 12. And the book I'm reading right now in January, that as I read books, I want to share with you, is this book, Winning Ugly. And it's interesting, because I've spoken with business leaders. As they become experts in business, they tend to read less books about business. And when I ask these successful businessmen why, they say because every business book is just saying the same things. They can't find original thoughts or new ideas because all business authors read other business books. No shade to John Gordon, who I've read many of his books, and I think that they're very good, but I don't read John Gordon's books anymore. Prove me wrong, John, and I will continue to make a decision. But I feel like once I've read a couple of his books, I've read all of his books. There's not a lot of new ideas yet in them. Again, John, due respect, prove me wrong. I'll continue to evaluate. And so I personally have found the same in basketball books, and specifically basketball coaching books. There's rarely new ideas in them. But where I find some really valuable nuggets or a way to zig when everyone else is zagging, or find a little bit of an advantage or a new thought or a new articulation, is to actually read books about other things and then apply it to basketball. And Winning Ugly is one of those books that I'm reading right now. It's actually about tennis. And I'll give you just a quick overview. This guy, Brad Gilbert, that wrote it, was a top 5 tennis player in the world, has over $8 million in career earnings in tennis, and his game was ugly. Very few other tennis pros or players respected his game at all, because he didn't have great form, didn't have great technique, didn't have great shots. He wasn't an incredible athlete. They couldn't believe that he would continue to beat them. And so he embraced this concept of winning ugly, because he had an ugly game. So as he's going through what it takes to win ugly, to win when you are not the more talented, to win when you don't have the best athletes, to win when maybe you're undersized, to win when maybe you don't have a great IQ. All these things, these are the common problems that coaches have, and they still want to win. Here is the theme, the principle. Let me actually mark this clip for our newsletter here. A savvy coach will recognize this savvy principle. When you aren't the more talented team, you can't try to win the same way that your opponent's trying to win. I'm going to repeat that, and I hope as I repeat this, you think about this yourself. when you're the less talented, less skilled, less smart team, you can't win the same way that your opponent's trying to win. You have to win ugly. You have to play the margin game. And that is what I'm going to continue to interpret from this book for you, our Savvy Coaching community, over the next month, over the next few weeks. So I'm going to give you two actionable tips to help you win ugly. Actionable tip number one, have a game plan for every single player on your team. I was coaching at a tournament for just our little academy team recently, and one of our players, I asked her, I said, okay, what's your plan for this weekend? And she's like, what do you mean? I said, what's your plan for this game? And she's like, I want to score. And I'm like, okay, how? She's like, I don't know, I just want to score a lot of points. So this is probably indicative of most players when they go into the game. They want to score a bunch of points. They want to score a bunch of points because the parents want to score a bunch of points, and we score a bunch of points because that's what they interpret as valuable. And it's fun to score. We all know this. So her game plan was, I'm trying to score. Unfortunately, her game plan was not going to help our team win, because if all she's focused on is scoring, that's not what our team needs. Our team needs her to focus on becoming a better defender. Our team needs her to focus on being able to get the ball moving so that not everyone's just catching and dribbling. So her game plan was A, limited, B, was not very detailed as to how she was going to do it, and C, was the wrong game plan. Guess what the other team that's more talented than us is focusing on? Trying to score. So we're going to have no chance. So actionable tip number one is each individual should have a game plan, and you should have a game plan. Remember, simplicity wins, and so this is the game plan. How I would structure your game plan, both corporately for your team and for each individual as well. One, what do you want to make happen? And make happen is not score. Make happen is what your strengths are. So each individual player should know, okay, these are my strengths. This is my unique value to the team. And for this girl, it was not scoring. That's not what her unique value was. Her unique value is actually offensive rebounding. She crashes hard, jumps well, and has a nose for the ball. She's very aggressive to go get it. That's her unique talent. So I told Mata, I said, all right, Mata, no, your goal, what you're going to make happen this game, is you're going to crash through glass and you're going to get offensive rebounds every shot you're crashing. If you're not crashing, I'm assuming you're tired. And so I'm going to give you a quick sub. I said, can we agree upon that? She said, yeah. One, what do you want to make happen? Each individual should know that going into each game. That's more important than your scout or the five baseline inbounds you're trying to defend. Can you get individual players to focus their intent on what they're trying to make happen, which is their unique skill set? And two, what are you trying to prevent from happening? Being competitive isn't trying hard. Being competitive isn't hating to lose. Being competitive isn't just trying to win. Being competitive is, can you try to win moments, not the game? So like something that's truly competitive is going to, when they get boxed out, give the extra effort to try to SOFO or spin off the first object as opposed to running to somebody and stop. Being competitive is they're going to win the race in transition offensively and defensively against their player by one step, regardless of if they get the ball or not, they're going to win the race every single time. Being competitive is every time the ball goes through the net, they're urgently trying to get the ball out of bounds faster and inbounds a split second sooner. That's being competitive. Being competitive is when you make a cut, you don't just make the right cut. You make the cut as explosively and as forceful as you can. You want to win your cuts. That's what competition is. And so this game plan of what am I trying to make happen, what am I trying to prevent from happening, actually grows competitiveness in players. So then, you know, I go on, I'd ask this player, okay, so what are you trying to prevent from happening? What are you going to prevent the other team from doing? And for her, she had no clue. So I helped her, because for her, what she needs to learn to prevent more is when her player catches the basketball, she must prevent them from shooting. She had a habit of when the opponents caught the basketball, she gave too much space. She had a poor stance and her hands were always down and the offense could do whatever they wanted to. I said, at the very least, you prevent anyone from ever getting off a shot. I want you to fly at them. And I don't even care if they beat you left. Let's just get in the habit of you giving effort, energy, and flying at them, and then we'll clean the rest up later. Because I would rather that than them just be able to do whatever the heck they want. So So you prevent your player from ever shooting. If your player ever shoots, then you have failed. You haven't executed your plan. That's the individual. I guess I am going to three actionable tips here. So one actionable tip is what does every individual on your team want to make happen and prevent from happening going into a game? They should know the plan. They should be able to articulate the plan. They should get time prior to the game. This is what a pregame routine is. Pregame routine isn't going out and doing two-line layups. This is where your pregame routine, your pregame individual routine is thinking about, focusing on, and becoming mindful of what they're trying to make happen, what they're trying to prevent from happening. Now, next. I don't think there is anything more important to put on the board in pregame than those same two questions for your team. Your second actionable tip is what is your team trying to make happen and what is your team trying to prevent from happening? This is the full extent. This is the minimum requirement of what you should do when you game plan for an opponent. And I would argue that for most teams, it is the full extent of your game planning. No players remembering all eight players that are going to get playing time on the opponent. If they're a driver or a shooter or a complete player, they're not thinking about that in the moment. Maybe they might be able to remember the primary check occasionally. They're not remembering their sets or their baseline inbounds at all. Okay. All of that is wasted time. It's us just as coaches massaging ourselves so that then we can throw up our hands and be like, we worked on this when our players can't guard it anyway. Whereas what will actually get the most traction and impact on the game is if when you evaluate your opponent, you look at their game style, you look at their strengths, and you look at their weaknesses. And what you're trying to make happen as a team is to apply your greatest strength to the opponent's greatest weakness. That's what you're trying to make happen. Now, what is that? What if you don't know what that is? That's what I tried to do with the Race and Space offense. Across the board, most teams' greatest weakness is their transition defense. And so, Race and Space teams work tirelessly to make transition offense their greatest strength so that we can go into nearly every game focusing our greatest strength, supposedly, if you're actually investing in that, investing massive time in that, to focus our greatest strength on the opponent's greatest weakness. And you know that this is true because when your opponent can set up their half-court defense, it's really hard to score. And if we can focus our greatest strength of playing fast against their greatest weakness, transition, we don't have to play against their set defense very much. We work with hundreds of teams. I've worked with thousands of teams over multiple years. I have never seen a team where I'm like, yep, you've mastered transition offense. You play fast enough and execute your transition fast enough and flow into your 11-second game fast enough. Let's work on something else. I've not seen it. I've never seen it, ever. So you never stop working on it. There's always another level to it. And if you get distracted and start focused on other things, then you're no longer focused on what you want to make happen, right? Okay. Second, what do you want to prevent from happening? And in basketball, most often, what you want to make happen is when you have control of the game. And what you want to prevent from happening is when they have control of the game. And for us, often, not always, but first of all, what we want to prevent is what they do best, which guess what most teams do best? Well, these are the exact questions that caused me to create Race and Space and Lock Left, because what most other teams do best is dribble to their right hand, pass to the right side, and run the offense that they practice the most. And so Lock Left is built to take away what they do most, and that's what we want to prevent. So let's lock in on one aspect of what we're trying to prevent. Maybe what we're trying to prevent is them getting into high ball screens. And so we're going to switch or trap and blow it up. Maybe what we're trying to prevent is they got a great post player posting up. So we're going to full front, be strong on the wall behind them. Like whatever it is that their greatest strength is, that's what you would remind your team of what you're trying to prevent. That's your second actionable tip. Tip one, what do you want to make happen and prevent? Every player has a plan and they meditate and get intentional on that pregame. Two, your team has a plan and it shouldn't be more complex than this. What are you trying to make happen as a team? What are you trying to prevent happening as a team? Can you measure it? Can you provide the feedback? Can you provide the coaching? Can you stay locked in on that throughout the entire game and not bounce around? All right, third actionable tip. How do you get there? As a coach, this would be a worksheet, and we're actually going to be going through this a little bit more in depth in next month's cohort. As we talk about peaking at the right time and winning games at the end of your season, we're going to go through evaluating opponents and preparing to create a pregame advantage. Four questions when you as a coach are evaluating an opponent that will inform what you communicate to your players and your team and inform what you work on your practices prior to playing an opponent. Four questions. What is your opponent's best weapon? I would encourage you right now as you're preparing for a game to grab a piece of paper, grab your notes app on your phone, and start to write these down because it will begin to order your thoughts to see these things. What's your opponent's best weapon? Where is your opponent weak? What is your best offensive weapon and how can you direct it at your opponent's defensive weakness? So let's say your best offensive weapon is you got one knockdown shooter who's your absolute best shooter. That's your best offensive weapon outside of racing and transition. And then what's your opponent's weakness? Opponent's weakness. Well, they like to sit in the 2-3 zone and they don't ever come out and play man. Okay, how can I direct my best weapon, this one shooter, at my opponent's weakness? What can we do as our 11-second action? What can we try to look for as our neutral actions? Where can we put them in space to direct my best weapon at my opponent's weakness? Four, what can I do to keep my opponent away from my own weakness? Let's say you've got a big that is not mobile at all and can't get out and guard ball screens. And they run a lot of ball screens. Okay, so your biggest weakness is you got one defender that's not switchable. Or maybe your biggest weakness is you got a really, really small player. You play man-to-man and they've got a big guard that can expose them in on the block. Whatever. How can you keep your opponent away from that weakness as much as possible? Let's say you're just really bad at half-court offense. You got to race faster. Let's say that you're a poor defensive rebounding team. Okay, how can you keep them away from that weakness? So those are the four questions that you should think about, and that would then determine the four quarters of your practice prep or one or two things you focus on in practice prep. What's your opponent's best weapon? Where's your opponent weak? What's your best offensive weapon, and how can you direct it at your opponent's weakness? And what can you do to keep your opponent away from your own greatest weaknesses? If you just think about your opponent like that and then prepare your team in that manner while staying true to your identity, that's how you win ugly. That's how you have a chance of winning against a better team, a more talented team, a deeper team, an older team, a more athletic team, or a better shooting team. Thank you for spending this time with me on the hours as you invest this time in yourself and with us. I would love you to continue to drop more questions or anything that you're struggling with or want some insight on from myself or Mark or Claire or the rest of our Savvy community. Just head to the Grow Community thread in our chat. I'm looking at it right now. We're deep diving on Tuesdays on our group consulting call, which we call our cohorts, where we're deep diving into specific tools. Right now we're going through the Row series. And then we do this on Thursday mornings on the hours, where we want to answer your questions and share with you our own insight and learning as we invest the hours together to continue to grow you as coaches. So please drop questions or comments in there. I hope you enjoy this time as I'm enjoying learning in this book. If you want to grab this book, I would highly recommend it. But if you just want to keep listening to me talk about it, I would be thankful that you're investing that time as well. As always, I'm Tyler. This is Savvy. Stay tuned this Saturday, as we've got a big announcement, a big thank you for you to celebrate bringing on Mark and continue to grow our Savvy Coaching Impact. We have big things planned for 2024. I hope to work with you or your team in person in 2024. Myself or Mark, please reach out about that. Just email us info@savvycoach.com and see if we can work something out to come in and grow your team and your basketball community with one of our in-person clinics. All right, we'll see you.